Hi there, if you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system which is usually in the bottom right hand corner to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. Welcome to Becoming Heisenberg. It's Entertainment Talk's podcast for Breaking Bad on AMC and Netflix. I'm your host, Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is David. How's it going?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Excellent. This is for Season 3, Episode 3, IFT, or I.F.T. What did you think of this episode?
I enjoyed this. I've forgotten that we went back to Tortuga at the opening of this, that this was the payoff for the head on the tortoise thing that we saw in... I've forgotten that that's where this pays off. So yeah, that was quite good to see that. It's then you've got some decent sort of Walt stuff in there. Jesse, I remember Jesse like constantly calling the phone and all that sort of stuff. I remember all that. But yeah, there was. I mean, it's a slightly slower episode than some of the other ones that we've had, I think, in this season so far. But you know, it's sort of it's piecing bits together. It's one of those kind of episodes, I think. This one,
okay.
But yeah, there's some good sort of setups, and you know, it feels a bit more of a setup for things coming forward this one. But yeah, still really enjoyable. There's some good stuff in there. The Skyler threatening to call the police and Walt just sort of playing it off. All that sort of stuff, I thought he's just really good.
Okay. Yeah, I thought this episode was quite great, quite excellent. I was trying to look at this as well and think, like, when would I say that Breaking Bad sort of properly kicks off? Like, properly sort of kicks into gear, and it's around this point, I think, when Jesse sort of comes back, Gus is here, the cartel stuff is kicking off, the Walt and Skyler drama really starts digging a bit deeper, Saul is, you know, involved, Mike is there, all those sorts of characters start coming around, and then that introduces other characters later, and it just keeps going and going and going. I didn't find this episode personally to be slow.
No, I wouldn't say it was slow at all. I think it's more a case of not that it's slow, but it's more of a setup episode for, you know, it's maneuvering things into position for plot lines which are to come, which I think is sort of the same as kind of what you're saying as well, really. It's not that it's a slow episode. Right. There's good stuff in there.
Gotcha.
It's just that they're sort of, it's more of a kind of maneuvering things into place episode, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'd agree with that as well. So, yeah, again, very interesting through this rewatch perspective we're doing of, like, I remembered certain things that happened, but not exactly how. So, like, when the tortoise showed up, I was thinking, okay, I remember that there's a head that gets on it, but I can't remember exactly when and how this, how that's all staged and stuff and how other characters get involved with that. The cousins continue to be very interesting as well. They're just these interesting, mysterious kind of characters. And I remember sort of where they end up, like how do they get from where they are to where they go and that kind of thing. So, yeah, it was interesting to see them play that, those things fall into place again. I was going to make a comment about acting in a particular scene, but I think I'll just mention that when we get to the scene itself. I mean, the acting across the board in this show is usually pretty excellent at worst, and at best it's even better than that. So, but there was a couple of scenes that really, really stood out for their acting. I think a few similar scenes that, like, people involved with the crew have said, like, that they were, because as they're watching this show be filmed, basically, and they're sort of commenting about, like, you guys were just killing it and that sort of stuff. So, similar kinds of scenes. Anyway, that's kind of it for the pre-talk. We have some, we have obviously the recap to get to and all that kind of stuff. Let's take a break. We'll do some housekeeping, let you know about what we've been up to, and then we'll get into that. See you in just a minute. Quick side note for the housekeeping stuff. I did plan this week to do the United Cast preview podcast for the upcoming 23-24 season, because that kicks off, well, for us, it kicks off next week, Monday. Not this Monday coming up, the Monday after that. Our first game is against Wolves. Obviously, there's been pre-season and transfers and all that kind of stuff, so there's still that to talk about. And for some reason, then, they do this every season. The transfer window usually closes after the season starts, which I never think is the greatest of ideas, because when you play your first game, that should be your squad, at least until January. But anyway, I'm going to be doing that today. I need to make, like, a couple of notes and stuff. I pretty much know what I want to say, but that podcast is not done yet, but it will be done around the same time this is uploaded and that kind of stuff. I also might do some Premier League predictions and other things. So those are some things I might do today. But the things we've already done, I did a podcast. It wasn't a DC Talk episode, but talking about the current problems Marvel and DC face. They do face problems. Obviously, every franchise or IP comes across problems eventually. It's just how you deal with them. But they're both in a position where they face problems, but are kind of totally different types of problems. There is one collective possible problem, which is superhero fatigue, but that's dependent on the person. But just other situations, like DC's doing this reboot thing, Marvel's trying to, like, kick on to its next phase. So I talked about all that. That's a completely spoiler free podcast as well, because it's just talking about what they're both doing currently. So there's that chat podcast I did as well for July 2023. Just talking about podcast plans and dating. I also did mention the submarine thing that happened, because I meant to mention that last month and I totally forgot. So, sure, we all remember that. Over on Becoming Heisenberg, obviously, we covered Season 3, Episode 2, and we've covered all the episodes so far up to this point. Speaking of Marvel, I did my light must-see review for Secret Invasion Season 1. I know it's a mini-series or whatever, but it's the first season, so I called it Season 1. It'll obviously lead into other stuff, spoiler-free and spoiler split sections of that. So there's my review for that. Over on Gaming Talk recently, talked about Spider-Man 2. It had a fantastic new trailer and revealed Venom in all of his glory, all of his slimy glory. Also talked about Xbox Game Pass Core, which is a sort of new version of Xbox Game Pass, because Xbox Gold is no longer a thing. It's sort of been merged and they've changed all that. And I talked a little bit about Toyster as well. Over on the other Gaming Talk podcast we did recently, talked about the Xbox and Activision acquisition. There were some updates from that. Also talked about Call of Duty. There's a rumored $2 billion budget. What that would go to, because that's a heck of a lot of money, I don't know, so I tried to guess. And also talked about, sorry, not for that, for Call of Duty was the updates for something to do with the game. GTA 6 is what I was talking about with the budget thing there. Did another podcast, another Why You Should Watch episode. This is for two shows, one of which is a spin-off of the other, 911 and 911 Lone Star, which I'm still thoroughly enjoying both of those shows. That's like a spoiler-free recommendation type of podcast, so you can check that one out. Recently did a DC Talk episode. This was talking about the Snyderverse trilogy and Wonder Woman review, and there was some interesting news yesterday about Wonder Woman, which we're not going to get into here, because there's just so many questions about stuff. but that's anyway, focusing on the original Wonder Woman film, the Gal Gadot film, and Snyderverse trilogy review. That's like a podcast project I was doing. Strong must-see review also for Elemental, which is Pixar's newest film, which I hear just hit $400 million for the box office, which is quite good so far. That's what we've been doing recently on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. Cold open. In a flashback, Tortuga is visited by Juan Bolsa at a bar. Led to the back by Juan, he is attacked by Lionel and Marco Salamanca, aka the cousins, for being a DEA informant and decapitated with a machete. And there is also a tortoise walking around, which they make comments about and stuff. Very interesting the way this is all staged. I kind of, because when the tortoise showed up, I was like, oh yeah, I remember someone's head obviously gets put onto that. But how exactly do we get there? How is that staged? Where's the tortoise go for it? You know, all those kinds of things. Because when these episodes start, I kind of look at them, obviously through the cold opens, and think, okay, where exactly are we? What were we doing in this episode? And then you sort of start to piece those bits together. So these two characters show up, and I'm just sort of thinking, you know, I recognize both of them, but couldn't remember exactly sort of, okay, what are they doing in this scene? And obviously we find that out. So it's an interesting one. We're starting to get into some more cousins sort of content, and they're not the most, you know, elaborate of characters, but they're very mysterious and interesting. But it's a good way to, as we both kind of mentioned earlier, as to set things up for later. What do you think of this opening scene?
Yes, I couldn't remember whether we'd seen that, whether we'd seen the head on the tortoise thing already, but we did. We saw it last season, and so that is one of the problems with the rewatch, is the really kind of standout, iconic, like WTF moments. It's difficult to remember whether we've seen them this time around or whether it's I'm remembering it from the previous time. But yeah, we did see that it was when Hank completely freaked out, which is the reason that they put it in this episode, because, you know, he gets the call this episode about going back. So that's why we're seeing this sort of flashback thing in there. The head on the tortoise thing had already happened, and that was one of the things that completely freaked Hank out. So now we're getting to see what happened and why the head was on the tortoise and all that sort of stuff. It's kind of brutal, that opening. It is fair to say. I don't remember that payoff from the first watch, but yeah, it's an interesting introduction, I think.
Definitely, yeah. So quite the way to kick off the episode. Walter White moves back into the house against Skylar's will. Walt Jr. is thrilled, but Skylar calls the police in an attempt to have Walt thrown out. The police tell her that they cannot do anything without a court order. When one policeman asks Skylar about any possible legal activity Walt has been involved in an attempt to get a legal basis for throwing him out, Skylar declines to mention his drug manufacturing. Yeah, I mean, okay, because, you know, he says, you know, you do what you have to do, Skylar, and all this kind of stuff. And Walt, they're both trying to sort of distract Walt Jr. of like, hey, I'll make you food, and you go in your room, and like, you know, kind of get him out of the way. But didn't they say that, they both said, oh, you're home a little bit early or something like that. And then they said, oh, what was it, Skylar checks the time, so Gosh is at the time sort of thing. So I guess, yeah, I guess what they both had planned, it was more of a concern to Skylar that Walt Jr. had come home a bit early as instead of Walt, but because the whole police thing that she had planned here, that was like a bit of a surprise to her. But yeah, I mean, he's not hit her that they know of. She doesn't say he's hit me. The problem with obviously what Skylar's done here is to the police, this comes across as just, he's annoying me, can you throw him out? But
yeah.
But the house is in, did she say both their names, I think?
Yes.
And it's, okay, you're not getting along. He hasn't done anything illegal or wrong or like caused any domestic abuse towards either of them. So they can't just say to him, oh, your wife wants you out, so you got to get out. Like, there's no legal... I mean, obviously, if she turns around and says, oh, he's doing meth, then that opens up a whole can of worms and stuff. But obviously, she goes to somebody else later for that. But see, it, on one hand, and again, watching this in a different cultural point, because I watched all of this show in 2014, so it's been nearly 10 years. And even in that time, things have changed and stuff, and we've become more aware of issues and stuff. I'm obviously referring to like domestic abuse and stuff. It was interesting looking at, because Walt doesn't do a whole lot in, like, not in the earlier scene, but when the police show up, he's just kind of chatting along, whereas this is more focused on Skylar. But it's, I got an interesting sort of reading from her character, from like, obviously from things like body acting, facial expression sort of acting, and actual, you know, the way of delivering their lines. With a show as high quality as this, there's usually more that you can read. And I did get, while I did get this struggle of like a woman who's in a, well, again, it's not a domestic abuse situation because he's not done that, but the reading was a similar sort of, this man makes me feel uncomfortable. But then, you know, that, I mean, yes, again, it's that gray area thing of, okay, he's done a bad thing, the cooking the meth, that's illegal, but he's doing it for a good, or trying to do it for a good reason. But he's not specifically done anything bad towards Skylar, but Skylar still had this reading on her, and it's great from Anna Gunn, of like a troubled woman, but not in a typical kind of, like, I've seen, you know, shows where a man will be living with a woman and he's been beating her up, and, you know, obviously she'll be distressed from that. There was a similar kind of reading from her, but because that same thing has not happened, it was kind of interesting and different. Whereas, again, although Brian obviously has work to do in the scene as Walt, he's kind of a bit more in the background once the policeman gets here. The thing I will say, though, the bit before this, when they're having the actual conversation, like when he gets in and they're initially sorting that out, the acting from both of them, because that's more of a combined sort of, there has to be some on-screen chemistry and stuff there. The acting there was just absolutely incredible, I thought. Like, even the subtleties of, how can I put this? Like, when Walter's sitting down and I think he's flicking through a newspaper or something, and even just, like, what Brian is doing with his head, like, the way he's tilting his head, or the way he's looking at Skylar and that sort of stuff, of this very just, you do what you have to do. He's not the one freaking out in the situation. She is. So, in terms of all those kinds of qualities, there was quite a lot of interesting stuff to pick up on. So, what do you think of the scene anyway?
Yeah, it is a really interesting one. And the police, as you say, when they get there, the problem is, yes, he's done something illegal, but she doesn't want to admit that to them, because, you know, it'd be interesting to know what would have happened had Walt Jr. not been there. Would she have grassed him up? Because the reason she then gives later on, when she's talking to the therapist, and she's basically saying that, you know, she doesn't want to, or she's talking, not therapist, the
attorney.
And she's saying that, you know, he's cooking meth, but she doesn't want her son to know. So would she have grassed him up then? You kind of get the feeling that that's not the only thing that's holding her back. I mean, it is very nicely done by Anna in that scene. And Brian's playing Walt wonderfully because he's just acting like the sort of concerned husband and father. And the problem that Skylar has is the fact, as you say, it isn't a domestic abuse situation, which is what the police were expecting, I think, when they got there.
Yeah.
The situation is literally just, you know, yes, he's done something illegal, but she won't actually tell them that. And he's not done anything to them directly. And arguably, from Walt's point of view, he is doing it for them. But none of that can go to the police. So they're kind of stuck with what they can do because, you know, it is his house. Yes, technically he broke in, but he broke into his own house. So, you know, they can't arrest him. Yeah, it's a really nicely written and very well played by all involved in that.
Definitely, yeah. But, yeah, they can't, like, there's nothing chargeable for them to take him away or anything, so...
Yeah, not unless he actually confesses what he actually did.
Yeah. And I suppose the other problem, even if Walt did hit her and she had a mark on her face, but that's not what she's called them for, they can't even look at her and go, excuse me, ma'am, how did you get this mark? Like,
they probably could, if, you know, and if she goes, oh, it's nothing, that there is grounds for them to...
Yeah, there'd be a different conversation there.
Yeah, there'd be a very different conversation if, you know, there had been some sort of abuse and she was sort of saying, oh, it's nothing. You know, the situation would have been different. They probably would have taken Walt into a separate room and tried to get her to actually sort of say, did he hit you? Yeah, he hit you. But, you know, it's not that situation. I mean, you know, Walt's not abusive to his family, and the whole point of him doing this is supposedly for his family, so...
Yeah, yeah. I also can't remember where exactly it is, but there's a conversation about the money as well.
Yes, that comes later on.
Okay. That scene sort of popped into my head because it's involved with the two of them. So later, Skylar meets with an attorney after she is assured that everything she says is confidential under attorney-client privilege. She admits that Walt is a meth distributor. Her attorney advises her to sue him for divorce and tell the police, but Skylar tearfully declines, saying that she does not want Walt Jr. to find out his father is a criminal, especially given the likelihood that Walt's lung cancer will kill him in the near future. Later on at work, Skylar begins an affair with Ted. They have a sort of small talk-ish chat. They begin kind of making out and stuff, then someone walks in, it gets, you know, awkward. And then she asks if his kids are at home. I can't remember, not that it's entirely necessarily relevant. I can't remember if Ted is married or not. Is he married?
I thought he was, or was he maybe separated? I can't.
I think he's separated. I think that's the last thing he said.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't remember much about Ted's character apart from this whole storyline and obviously the books thing. Because she said all about his kids. I didn't remember that he had kids. Mm. And then I thought, okay, does he have a partner then? But yeah, I think he said separated was the last thing. Not that that would really change his mind necessarily, but or that it would change the scene. So this is kind of a follow-up from what's just happened here, and she's trying to figure out what she can do. But yeah, I suppose there's Walt Jr. in the whole situation as well. Again, this kind of brought up, like, even if a woman is brave enough to go to, whether it's a therapist or an attorney or whoever it is, a police or, you know, somebody to talk about an issue they've had, obviously, I know that's obviously very difficult for people to do when they have to, like, you know, get that initial courage to go and actually speak to somebody, regardless of who it is. And again, I got that kind of reading from her of he's problematic to her, like what Walt is, even though he's, you know, explaining himself and stuff. But this kind of, she's being advised to, again, this is kind of a follow up of like what I was talking about a minute ago with the whole kind of her having the problems and stuff. And what I mean is, her then taking advice from it's from somebody different in this situation, because it's not the policeman, it's the attorney, and kind of okay, she's listening to somebody give her advice. But in life, just because somebody does give you advice to do something, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to do it. And depending on what it is, do you have the confidence or the, you know, are you able to do what somebody is recommending you? And Skylar, again, here is kind of struggling with that, which is different to the police officer scene, because that was simply just, hey, what has he done wrong? Whereas this is, okay, you've told somebody what he's actually done, but here's what you can do about it. Whereas the police scene is different to that. So, again, got similar readings to that, but again, different ones, because the situation is different to a, like, traditional situation, I suppose, as to, like, again, Walt's done something bad, but not the typical kind of bad thing that you'd expect, if that makes sense. So, again, I found it interesting in the same way, but I guess contextually different, because it's her talking to somebody else. What do you think of the attorney scene?
Yeah, I mean, the attorney's quite right, of course, but, you know, I mean, she has got quite obvious grounds for divorce. She's found out that her husband mm-hmm. is a meth cook, you know, that there's, I mean, that's perfectly reasonable grounds for divorce, I would think, but, you know, Scarlett says she doesn't want Walt Jr. to find out. The affair thing is kind of interesting, because she's realized, I think, that she's in a situation where, I mean, Walt sort of forced himself back into the house, and she's not going to be able to find a way of getting like rid of him and getting him to leave. So she does the one thing that she does have some control over, which is going to sleep with Ted, who's made it fairly clear that he's quite interested in her. And, you know, that is something she can do, and is a way that maybe proves to Walt that she's over him and she doesn't want anything to do with him, and also will hurt him and potentially might get him to leave. So it's an interesting sort of tactic, because I don't think it's because she likes Ted particularly. You know, particularly she knows that Ted is also a criminal. So, but it is something that she can do as a way of provoking Walt into hopefully giving up and leaving. So I kind of like that as it's interesting that's where she goes with it. I can't quite remember exactly how that all plays out, but yes,
I remember it plays out very dramatically, because it's a drama TV show. But no, it plays out particularly dramatically. I think this goes on for a bit of time as well. Anyway, it's going to be interesting to see. I remember what happens to Ted, but not specifically how we get there, which again is an interesting part of this whole journey. But yeah, I suppose for Skylar, this is simply, you know, legally I can't quite get you without really disrupting things. Mainly your situation with Walt Jr. So I'm going to find a way to just get back at you, which is by doing this. And obviously we see the, not actual punch, but the punch at the end of the episode, and Walt's sort of reaction to that, which we can talk about later. But yeah, that's simply what I think is going on here with Ted. He's somebody that, for what Skylar probably wants to do, which is get back at him, he is a man that's available, one that wants her, but again, like you said, isn't sort of into him. Like, she's doing that because she can, because Ted wants to, and because it's a way to get back at Walter. But it isn't sort of like, oh, she's dying to be with him and, you know, really, really wants an affair. It's just because she sort of can. So yeah, we'll see that to the end of the episode. Jesse Pinkman is still having trouble coming to terms with Jane's death, but has moved back into his house. Sol comes by asking Jesse to try to convince Walt to get back into drug manufacturing. There's something interesting Sol-wise with that, but I'll mention that in a minute. Jesse dismissively says he will handle it. However, later on, he chooses to cook a batch himself. He also does repeatedly call Jane's phone basically for the whole day. I mean, it seems like what sort of noon, afternoon, when he's there with Sol. And then, yeah, by the time we see him later, it's definitely nighttime, and then the call gets cut off, which was that whole thing was quite sad to see.
Again. Yeah.
And I didn't remember him doing that. With the phone.
Yeah, see, I did remember that bit, yeah.
Oh, yeah. For Sol here, right? Okay, he's... I remember when... I think this is in season one, when Jesse says to Walt, we don't need a lawyer, we need a criminal lawyer. So a lawyer who is a criminal, right? So you look at Sol and, okay, that's who that is. He's not just a normal lawyer. He is a criminal lawyer. And not just a lawyer that deals with criminals. He is, a criminal lawyer.
Yeah.
Which is specifically what they sort of need for what they're doing. Obviously, Sol's concern is, okay, you two need to get back to cooking so I can get back in business with you. And we can, you know, get this ball rolling again. He also mentions to him as well, like, how come you didn't return my calls? I didn't know if you were, like, you know, dead or what happened to him. So we had to go around to his house. And obviously he knows about that because of the whole deal thing, that the negotiating for the house price from the previous episode scene. Knowing that he's just got back from rehab, and then Sol's like, cool, you're back. So when are you kicking off again with it?
Yeah.
Is like, wow, he's just gotten back from, you know, drug rehab, and you want him to kick back into drug dealing business and making it and being not just around drugs, but like making them. But Sol doesn't do it in a sort of... Sol almost does that, because that's not a good thing to... Obviously, that's not a good thing to suggest to somebody in Jesse's position.
No.
It's a very bad thing to suggest. But he does it in, like... And this might be sort of Bob Odenkirk's way of doing this, because obviously he's a bit of a comedy actor as well, isn't he? He does it in what I would describe as, like, a friendly way, which it was just interesting, his approach to that, of, like... You've just come back from drug rehab, but I needed to get straight back into that business of doing that. And not really having in mind... Because to him, if Jesse falls off the wagon again, okay, he's got to care about Jesse as a client because he doesn't want anything to happen to him, but he also needs him to get back into it in case something happens and he's needed as a lawyer. But yeah, he doesn't do it in a menacing way of like, Jesse, you need to get out. He's like, hey, so when you kicking on back with the... He does it in his own sort of like Bob Odenkirk soul comedy sort of way. I found that like an interesting approach to that. Anyway, what did you think of the Sol and Jesse scene?
Yeah, I mean, the way Sol sort of comes across is, yeah, he's like, there's no subtlety to it, really. It is very much sort of, hey, you're back, let's get cooking again, and
immediately,
you
know,
yeah, and you need to. And I mean, I think part of it is probably that Sol is being lent on a bit by Gus, of sort of, you know, he knows there's lots of money to be made and they want him back in the business. So because it's less about, I don't think he does care as much about Jesse. He cares about getting Walt back into the business. That's what he cares about. You know, if he gets Jesse addicted and Jesse dies, he's going to have less of a problem with that because, you know, Walt can cook on his own. They don't need Jesse. So I think there is a certain amount of that going on as well.
Possibly, yeah.
Jesse himself, it is incredibly sad, just, you know, him seeing him just call that number over and over and over again. And in some respects, the fact that they kind of cut that number off I think it's probably a good thing for him, because otherwise he's never going to get out of that loop of just moping around the house and calling to listen to Jane's voice. So
in fact, it's after that when he decides to go back to cook. So
yeah, you know, and I guess there is, you know, clearly he's incredibly down. He's not in a great place, and yeah, he's like decides that what else is he going to do at this point? You know, because he does need money. I mean, he spent pretty much everything he had on buying that house. I mean, Sol says when he turns up, he calls him house poor, which, you know, basically meaning that, okay, you've got a house, but you've got nothing to put in it and you've got no income. So, you know, what are you going to do? So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, what is Jesse going to do? He's not going to go work at a, like, McDonald's or something. Of course, he's going to go back and cook. What else is... He hasn't really got any other skill set right now, so... and he's got no income, so, yeah. But, of course, he goes back and tries to cook on his own, which he's perfectly capable of doing at this point, but not to the level and quality of what Walt can do. Which I think is where we go. I have a vague recollection of that's sort of where we end up with the next episode. I seem to remember vaguely. I think that's the next obvious place, but yeah
again, that's a way of sort of kicking that on, so that was quite good. Lionel and Marco, the twins, cousins rather, and they are also sort of twins, still a minivan bringing Hector Salamanca with them to a meeting with Gus Fring and Juan Bolsa. Gus says that they cannot kill Walter right now as he's doing business with him. Once Gus's business with him is done, however, they will let him kill Walter, and then there's a bit about Hank afterwards. I'm guessing they killed this poor old lady, and I did not remember that happened, because they just sort of show up and she's like, oh, hi, and then they cut to her disappearing afterwards. Again, it's the cousins. They're really interesting to watch. They don't really say anything, do they? And they just have their facial expressions and stuff. I don't know if you notice as well, there's a little nugget of, and you brought up something similar like this before with Gus. Who was it again? I think it was Gus. There's a conversation that goes in a certain way. Gus then walks outside, I think, to talk to Juan. And there's this quick little turn from the cousins that they turn around, physically turn around in their chairs to watch Gus walk out the room. And they have this like slightly more shocked look on their face. It's a really, really quick little thing. So I thought that was kind of interesting as well. Because again, it leans into that kind of mystery of the characters and what they're about and stuff. Obviously there's the rivalry here between Hector and Gus, which is always great. Hector starts ringing his bell a bunch of times. Obviously he can't speak, so that's like his way of either alerting, agreeing or disagreeing or whatever. Obviously I think that was to do with Walter, so that was quite good. One other thing I really like about the cousins as well, I don't know if this is listed as like their theme tune or something, but you know that low kind of, I don't know what you'd describe it as. It's like a music that kicks off whenever they're on screen. It's like a twangy sort of sound. I think that music kind of elevates those scenes as well, which I thought was quite good. I'm guessing that could be like their score or their theme or something.
Yeah.
But that was quite cool. But no, it's a good scene. And we'll see again where this goes. Again, this was kind of a... Particularly with this episode, as opposed to maybe the last one, because the last one was kind of at the end, you cut back to Gus. He's clearly doing something in this place, and he calls the cousins off of Walter because they want to kill him. And this was kind of kicking back off with that a little bit more, kicking off with the kind of Hector and Gus rivalry. So, I thought it was quite good to get back to that. What did you think?
It's interesting watching this having seen Better Call Saul now as well.
Mm.
And the sort of, yeah, knowing the relationship between those characters, between Hector and Gus previously, and the little things that Gus does, which is sort of needling Hector, like the fact that he's obviously chosen a place to meet where it's not wheelchair accessible. Knowing that the guy is there, and knowing that he's going to be coming in a wheelchair, and that he particularly chooses a place where it's not wheelchair accessible. There's little things like that. They have to pick him up and take you up the stairs.
I didn't think of that for some reason, but yeah, it's good.
There are little bits and pieces like that where it's Gus just slightly sort of needling at Hector, which I rather love.
Mm.
The minivan scene, I thought, was really quite sweet. If you're wondering, if you watch right until the end and watch the end credits, there is a dedication to somebody called Shari Rhodes on the end credits. And that Shari Rhodes was the woman that played the redhead lady that was in the on the scooter. And she passed away a few months after the episode had aired. She was actually a casting director as well, I think she may have been casting director on the show, and she just happened to play this little role on screen, and that's why there's a dedication credit to her, because she passed away just after the episode aired. But I really like that little scene of them sort of, you know, kind of her turning around and the cousins taking the van, and then that's sort of backwards and forwards between Hector and Gus and all that, and the difference of sort of Hector and the cousins kind of out for revenge, and that sort of more adult conversation between Juan and Gus of like, look, you know, they obviously want this Walter guy dead, but you know, we're sort of more men in business kind of thing, and rather than going with their gut and being out for revenge, and I don't know how much I can control and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, I really rather like all that. It was it's always great seeing them on screen together.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Lots of talent there. Hank is still stressed and provokes a bar fight. Sorry, fight at a bar. He uses his DEA status, DEA agent to prevent the others at the bar from attacking him. The one thing I didn't quite understand in this scene is Gomez later on, when they deal with the situation. Says, oh yeah, you left your gun in the front seat, which I think we do see him do that. My question was more, why did Gomez bring that up?
Because it's, you know, he went back in and really should have had his gun
right
on him, and he clearly knew that when they were in the bar, he had his gun on him. So, and then he goes out to the car, then hides his gun, or puts his gun in the car, and then goes back into the bar. So that's very much an indication that he was going in for a fist fight. You know, I think that's what he's sort of getting at, and that's why he brings it up. Because there's no reason he should have taken his gun off at that point.
Okay. I thought it was like some sort of he hadn't followed a procedure or something like that.
Well, not so much hadn't followed a procedure, but I think it's more a case of there was no reason for him to take the gun off unless you were going back in
right
for a sort of, you know, because if you were going in just to arrest them, you would take your gun in with you. And Hank is sort of trying to argue that they jumped me. Gomi obviously knows that's not true, because Hank had brought up the fact that they were dealing beforehand. So, I think Gomez obviously knows that that's not true. So they've concocted the story that the guys had like jumped him, and yeah, but at that point he should still have had his gun on him.
I see.
So.
Right. But yeah, he's stressed about things, and I don't have as much to say about this scene as the other ones. It does lead to more stuff later, but and does start a little bit of tension between Gomez. What do you prefer to call him?
Gomez is fine. I mean, yeah, as I say, the reason that he did that is because of the fact that, you know, he just had this call saying that he's going to get sent back down to where he was before, and that's the reason why we get the Tortuga flashback right at the beginning as well, because it's a sort of attached to that and the sort of PTSD kind of thing that he's dealing with from the first time he was down there.
Yeah. All right, anything else you want to say about that scene?
Not really, no.
Cool. Walt shows the money he has earned to Skylar. This is what I was talking about earlier. In an attempt to get her to accept it, as he says it will help with everything. Mortgage, Walt Jr.'s college tuition. He asks her to at least think about it, however, when she gets home from work later. In an attempt to get Walt to distance himself, she says, "I fucked Ted." I couldn't remember when and where she... I remember she said that. That's quite an iconic sort of line. I couldn't remember where and when she said it, or how long after she'd first gotten with Ted she'd said that. But in the same episode, literally about 10 minutes later. So yeah, Walt's reaction here is interesting. I mean, it's not much of a reaction, but you can still get something from it. This just sort of stonewall faced, oh, almost like he kind of... And it's a reaction of he can't really do anything about that because he knows he's doing his thing as well. But because obviously he hasn't processed it at that point. That's just the initial shock of like, oh, you did that. And it's kind of this her way of almost coming over and be like, I fucked Ted. Now let's go sit over there with the kids and have dinner. And Walt is just... Oh, right. I guess that's like that's happening sort of thing. I suppose it's the way she builds up to it as well. He's just like there sorting dinner and she's like getting closer and closer and closer. And he's kind of like, what's going on? Like, he's like, why, how come you're so close up to me sort of thing? And then just says it. And, you know, we've talked before about, somebody wrote in last week, who will get to their response in a minute, about it being a white male led show, which it is. There's a lot of white male lead characters in the show, and what can come with that, and particularly with this show, is some egos, particularly Walt's ego, which is one of the main themes and things in the show, because obviously it's about how this overqualified high school teacher goes from breaking, you know, how he's breaking bad, and how he becomes Heisenberg. So I suppose to sort of poke at that ego, because I don't know if he thinks like she wouldn't do something like that, or what he thought her response was going to be, or what she was going to do, but he wasn't expecting this, I don't think, at least an initial shock. And given, again, this show is, again, the main center of it is the story of how this guy breaks bad, and what his ego is like, how he deals with things, how he responds to things. This is a big way to poke that ego. What did you think anyway?
Yeah, I think there is an amount of shock to it, obviously. And it's the way that Walt is acting as though nothing is wrong, and I'm just cooking dinner, I'm making a pot roast, I invited Walt Jr.'s friend to stay for dinner, and he's just being very sort of like normal happy families and trying to sort of be completely normal about it. And then, you know, he's like, oh, can we talk about whenever you're ready, talk about what we talked about earlier. And he's trying to make all nice and that it's all okay. And then she drops that kind of, you know, bombshell on him. And there isn't really a reaction he can have from that other than being like somewhat shocked. And she's, as I said, it's the one thing she does have control of. And it's something that will hurt him. And whether she's just done it purely out of revenge or whether she's done it because she hopes that it will get Walt to give up and go away. I don't know exactly. But it's something that she could do. And so she did it. Because I think things have got out of control in her life, and that is something she did have control over. So
it's a way to push back as well.
It is a sort of pushing back. And he's not, I mean, you know, Walt has been, Walt in this, you know, we know all the stuff he's done, and this is just something that she could do herself, you know, and have some control over. So it's a really interesting scene and how it sort of played out. And she's sort of, yeah, this is the way Walt's sort of playing happy families, and then she does the same thing as she drops that bomb and then goes and like these sort of, hey, you boys eat your salad, goes and sits at the table, you know.
Also for Walt as well, obviously this is clearly a shock, but it's also like it doesn't read as if he's thinking, oh, that was an option either. There's no reading on his face, to me at least, in terms of, oh, that was shocking, but it was an option. I've done this thing. I've told Skylar this thing. What am I thinking are her options for responding back? But that, I don't think that was one of them. Yeah.
No.
So it's very, very good. That's actually the end of the episode, isn't it? Yes. Because she drops that bomb and then there's couple little moments. See, it's one of them, rather than her just saying what she says and then you just, you know, did that a bit loudly, you just cut to black. There's that, because sometimes we talk about, okay, we want things to be well-paced, not too fast and definitely not too slow. You want something to be well-paced, but when you get moments like this, give your characters room to breathe, to react to things, and this was, like, really well done for that as well. So, good stuff. All right, let's get some feedback, some emails. If you would like to write into the show, what do you think of the show so far? Is this your first time through, your second, your 50th, your 10th, whatever number you're on? Let us know what you think of the scenes. What do you think is going to happen? All those kinds of things. Matthew at entertainmenttalk.org, Twitter, eTalkUK. Everyone's still calling it Twitter, so I'm just going to call it Twitter. So Twitter, eTalkUK. And there's information in your show notes as well. Caroline writes back and says, I enjoyed listening to your response about my comment. It was nice to hear two adults talk about these types of issues. That Zoe's playlist sounds interesting. Should I watch it? Yes, you absolutely should. That is not even something I need to think about.
Yeah.
Yes, you absolutely should. We'll get to that in just a moment, though. We try to be, you know, civilized adults that listen to problems or read things, or, you know, that's what adults are supposed to do. That's not what all the adults in the world do, because some of them are very, very silly and stupid. And there's too many adults in the world that don't act like adults. But I'm always somebody, as I said, that tries to, you know, read about other people's experiences and or listen to people. It depends on what the format is or the way the information's come across, but consume that information. It's not even really something I actively look for. It's just information that's out there. And I guess that's kind of the circles I've ended up in, I suppose. But I do that for two reasons. One of which is because I genuinely find that interesting. And two, because I think it's important to learn about what other people are going through in the world. Because if you only learn about what your type of person is going through, then you won't necessarily learn about other people. And people can do that in their own way that they want to, but that's just how I kind of approach that. I'm not just talking about like diversity issues. I'm talking about just experiences in life. There's lots of things we've all not done and things that we have done. There's ways that you can and can't relate to people. And even if you can't relate to somebody about an issue, then might be worth looking into. But it depends on what you as an individual want to learn, want to read about, and, you know, all those sorts of things. But I enjoyed those types of conversations. Obviously, we brought it up because Caroline did mention it. But, it was interesting to try to, like, tie that conversation to this show and, you know, again, discuss about shows that, again, Breaking Bad's not old, but it's not a new show. So it's still sort of, again, this isn't one that, again, when people talk about Friends and these old shows and how they're a bit outdated because of what they approach to do, Breaking Bad's not really got that. Okay, it's a white male-led show with one or two characters that have got a few egos. Like, Saul's got a bit of an ego, but his ego is a bit different to Walter's. But, again, the whole ego white male thing is supposed to be there because that's what Walt's story is about. It's about this man who does break bad and how does he handle the things that he handles, and when he starts to gain a little bit of control and it goes beyond the sort of I'm just doing this for my family, how does he handle that? So it gets into those discussions. But it doesn't really, it doesn't have sort of what I would specifically describe as, like, diversity issues, because it doesn't really, it just sort of tells its story. Like, it doesn't, I'll give just a little example. Like, in Friends, which I have been rewatching while I wash up and do, you know, whenever I'm in the kitchen, I sort of put it on. So whether I'm making a drink or I just sort of stick it on. There is quite a few times, now again, I'm not blaming the show for this, it's just what it is and it's an observation point. There is quite a few times in the show where one of the characters will be dating one of the others. Obviously, that's a main point of the show, because these are young 20, 30 somethings people in New York that are, you know, sorting out their love lives and jobs, and yeah, that's what the show's about. And there's quite a few times when, more so with the guys than the women in the show, although it does happen on both sides, one of the women they're going out with will do something slightly odd, right? Like, they'll come back from a date or something, and let's say Joey or Chandler or Ross, a bit more so with Ross. I've got, like, a worse opinion of him as a character. He's not that great. He's a bit, he's a little bit controlling. He's a little bit controlling, particularly with the whole we're on a break thing. It's interesting. And even the way he handles that is not, it's not very good. But it's kind of a part of his character. But there's a few times when one of them will say something like, oh, I went on a date with this woman and she did something crazy. And obviously the way we talk about people that do things like that or kind of mental health issues have changed. Breaking Bad doesn't get into those sorts of things. Like, there's crazy situations that these characters get themselves into, but it's contextually sort of complete. Like, the things both shows are tackling are sort of completely different. But
yeah,
I wouldn't say Breaking Bad has the issues like that, of those types of conversations. But anyway, glad you enjoyed our discussion on it. Any reflection on any of that at all?
No, I mean, only really what we were talking about last time, which was, agree with you as well. I think there are, Breaking Bad, yes, the casting might have been slightly more diverse had it been cast now. I still think that it would have been much more problematic had you had a person of color in the lead role of Breaking Bad, because it changes massively the sort of dynamic.
It would also change Walter's background as a character.
Yeah, it changes the dynamic and the sort of background of that character to put in that situation, and it actually makes it slightly more problematic. I think had it been a black guy who was this upstanding teacher and, like, you know, he gets cancer and the first thing he decides to do is go and cook meth as a way of getting money.
That doesn't flow as well.
Yeah, I actually think that comes across as rather more problematic than it being a sort of, than it being the Walter that we know. And equally with Jesse, had it been a high school dropout that was a black kid that decided to go and cut drugs, again, that becomes rather more stereotypical, I think, as well. Mm. You know, it becomes a bit more of a sort of Hollywood lazy stereotype doing it that way. So there is actually issues with doing that.
Yeah.
So I think that, yeah, there are, it's one of those things. I don't necessarily think, yeah, I mean, there may be some other characters that you possibly would have cast slightly differently, but I don't know. I mean, the cast is what it is. It was made when it was made. So, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. And I think you've got to be careful about how you cast certain roles from both sides. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that's for the writer's room to, and the casting directors to deal with. So,
yeah.
Here we go. Anyway, on the Zoe's playlist, yes, you should absolutely watch it. I think it's... What did I say before? Because it's been... How long has it been since we last saw that? Almost 2 years. Gosh, that's too long.
Yes.
It's too long, yeah. Too long of time. I would say it is possibly, probably, the best show on TV since Breaking Bad. So, since 2013, which was 10 years ago. Particularly the second season. Which really stood out to me. But it did what a second season should do, which is be better than the first season. Mm-hmm. That's not putting the first season down, it's just you get better and better as you go along. Just in case you don't know much about it, so it was on NBC, it was renewed for a second season, then it was cancelled, and then Roku picked it up for like a Christmas film. I think it was called Zoe's Extraordinary Christmas.
Yes.
Which was on Roku. I don't know which country you're in, because obviously streaming's different for different countries. In the UK, you can buy... Now, it's up to you what you want to spend money on, what you want to subscribe to, what season passes and stuff you want to buy. That's up to you as a as an individual. You can buy seasons 1 and 2 on Amazon. They did go on a sale a few months ago. I think they were £5 each, and I did pick them up. I bought them because I just wanted to have access to the show. It's not on a streaming service anywhere. It's definitely not on E4 anywhere anymore, because that would have expired a long time ago. E4 was where it aired over here. Once you get through those seasons, so those are on Amazon. I don't know if you can buy them on Apple or
yes, you can.
Like that.
You can get them on. They're on Apple. They're on Sky Store. They're on Google Play as well.
Right. So you have to go and buy the seasons, unfortunately. And then once you get to the, assuming you like the show and get through it, which hopefully you do, Zoe's Extraordinary Christmas is on Roku, which is completely free. You don't even need an account, do you? You just go on there and you just press play, I think.
Yeah, it's the Roku channel. You just need to be able to sort of access the Roku channel from something, which is, if you've got Sky, if you're in the UK and you've got Sky, it's actually on Skybox. The Roku channel is one of the apps on the Skybox, and it is completely free. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you can get it that way.
Yeah. One thing I'd possibly recommend doing, I did, you could call it the pilot episode if you want, for my sort of Why You Should Watch podcast. The first one of those I didn't call it the same thing. It's called Why Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist is So Special. If you search for Zoe's playlist, or if you go on the categories list, you should be able to find it there. That's like a spoiler-free breakdown of why the show's so good, and there's like a ton of stuff I talk about in there. So
yeah,
you can either listen to that after you started watching, or before, or whenever you'd like to. So... it feels unlikely that will come back, just because it's gone so quiet, and obviously there's all the strikes and stuff now, but if it came back one day, I mean, you never know. You never know what will happen in TV. Hopefully it does come back one day. Josh writes in and says, says, Matt keeps using the term top-tier prestige for describing TV shows. Clearly you think Breaking Bad is. What else is? Yeah, that's something I can't remember if I've like picked that phrase up from somewhere or picked up a similar phrase, and I can't remember how I ended up coming up with that, but because to me there's multiple different ways of ranking and rating things, which is a fun thing to do when you make these podcasts. It's one of the reasons I made the rating system that I did, because it's very fun to use, and I judge it by my own metric and that sort of stuff, rather than just, oh yeah, it's a 9 or an 8 or whatever, which I still do. But I use my own rating system stuff. That's sort of like, because Strong Musty is like the best of the best of TV, But there's also a phrase I sometimes throw on top of that, which is like, this is top. If I'm saying something like is like strong, must see, top tier prestige, I also talk about sort of it being top shelf, because I kind of imagine somebody browsing a shelf of like TV or something, and it's sort of at the top of the shelf, because it's at the top of the pile. It's just kind of what I ended up coming up with. Breaking Bad's easily there. I mean, Breaking Bad's at the top of the tree, at the top of the shelf, whatever metaphor you want to use. What other shows? There's a dozen shows. Zoe's Playlist is definitely on that shelf. All of it. So many to name. What else is on there? Recent examples, things like Working Mums, which I recently reviewed the final season of. That was definitely up there. It's also a case of what as well, not just for, oh, these seasons of the show were really good, but these other ones weren't. With something like Working Mums or Breaking Bad, which are just two examples I can think of right now, it's, no, these things were good from the pilot to the finale. And, okay, yeah, had a few little dips here and there, but for the most part, really kept its consistency, which is what I definitely say for Breaking Bad. There's things, slower moments and set up and stuff like that, you have to do that, but when you look back on something that's finished like that, like a Breaking Bad, and you go, yeah, that whole thing was just top tier prestige, that's sort of how I look at that. You seem like you're about to say something.
I mean, I just can't judge Working Runs because I've not seen it, but I mean, there are some very obvious ones in this, which are Breaking Bad, obviously. Better Call Saul, I think, as well.
Mm-hmm.
Sopranos, The Wire. And I would put those slightly lower down the list because there are points where they have bits and pieces where they aren't quite as strong. I mean, that's the sort of unique thing about Breaking Bad is there really isn't a bad episode of that show. You know, there've been one or two episodes which, aren't possibly worse than some of the others. But as we've said, even a bad episode of Breaking Bad is probably better than most of the stuff on TV. So, yeah. There are points with some things like The Wire and The Sopranos where they do drop off a bit more than that for multiple episodes. But still, overall, as a group, is a very, very solid show. In the same sort of vein, I mean, there are shows which are in a different vein, which are things like, I mean, Firefly, which was a one season show, but it is brilliantly written from start to finish. I know there's issues with Josh Whedon at this point, but don't judge the show on that. The show itself is a brilliantly written show. Seinfeld is another example, again, completely different genre, but consistently solid quality throughout. Mad Men, I know a lot of people talk about being superb throughout. Succession, Atlanta is another
Atlanta's
one.
So good. It's so good.
Veep would be another one I will put in there as well. The Americans, although I never actually got to the end of that. It's
I
another one
that show.
Put up there. Leftovers is another one that comes up quite a lot. I May Destroy You, I know, has a lot of fans as well.
Last of Us.
Last of Us. Last of Us completely up there. Watchmen, of course, the TV series, which I know upset some people because it's so different from the comic books, but it wasn't an adaptation of the comic book. But in and of itself is a superb piece of TV. Deadwood gets a lot of love. Trying to think what else. I mean, there's the difficulty with Game of Thrones is I would at one point to put that up there until you get to that final season, which it falls off a cliff.
I'd put it on there.
Yeah. So, it's the frustrating thing about the final season is it should have been much better than it was. So certainly that, The Good Place would be another one as well.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, you know, again, more comedy, but that's a beautiful series from start to finish. Battlestar Galactica, I think, is a great show as well, although it maybe fudges the landing slightly, but yes. And The West Wing would be another one I'd definitely put up there. Mm-hmm. Which is
Silicon Valley. Was it? What's the Apple show called?
Game thing.
I can't think. You know what I'm thinking of, don't you?
But yes.
Rob McElhenney, Ashley Birch.
It is called. The first season was subtitled Raven's Quest, Mythic Quest.
That's it. Yeah. Couldn't think of it. That's a phenomenal TV show.
Yes, Mythic Quest is another phenomenal TV show. I mean, a lot of the Apple stuff, actually.
I've yet to watch a bad Apple show.
Yeah, I mean,
I've watched ones that are good, like decent, good stuff, but not one that I thought this is a bad television show.
Yeah, I've yet to come across that. Suspicion, which they've just announced isn't returning for a second season. Was that the espionage thing? That was the espionage thing, which they're building it as an Uma Thurman show, which is slightly unfair to the rest of the cast because it was very much an ensemble thing, that show. But I thought that was great. I thought C was really good. Morning Show is a great show.
I think C should be talked about in the same breath as Game of Thrones, but it won't be.
Yeah. No, you're quite right. It won't be.
Yeah. But yeah, plenty of great examples there. And if any of you have got any ones to add to the pile, maybe some of you were like screaming at your podcast players going, say this show, mention this show, then let us know what you're thinking of. One more before we move on that I just remembered as well. Foundation. Fantastic
TV show. Well, I mean, I thought of a couple more as well. We've got Slow Horses and Severance are the other two. Apple, if you want like good, really high quality, you know, approaching Breaking Bad level quality TV shows, pick up an Apple TV subscription. They're giving them away free on loads of different things.
There is a lot of different ways to get free trials. Yeah.
Free trials of like anything from a month to like 6 months free trials. Just Google Apple free trial and I'm sure you'll, wherever you are, and one will pop up that you have access to, I'm fairly sure. But if you want that sort of level of quality, Apple don't have necessarily a lot of shows on their streaming stuff, but it's relatively cheap for what it is, and they very, very, very much go for quality over quantity. And they're just, I mean, some you might like, some you might not, but they are all very high quality TV shows. Mm-hmm. So worth checking out.
Yeah, definitely. And as I was mentioning a minute ago there, when all these shows we've just listed, and again, you can all watch what you want to watch as, you know, individuals. It's your TV to watch what you want on it. But yeah, it does just make you think like all these really high, and those are just the really high quality TV shows. There's still a ton of like great shows out there to watch.
Yeah.
And then there's things like Love Island and Too Hot to Handle, which has got a game, by the way. Like a mobile game on Netflix, and like Big Brother's coming back, and it's like, yeah. So anyway, go watch some good stuff like this show, like Breaking Bad. Michelle finishes off here and says, I found the scenes between Skylar and Walt to be chilling. Do you know if either of them got Emmys/awards? This show particularly got a bunch of awards. I think both of its last seasons. Because the show itself won at least a few Emmys. I've not got any information in front of me, but Brian, I think, won a few times. I think Aaron did. Aaron Paul, Jesse, Anna Gunn, I think. But a bunch of them won a bunch of awards, but I don't know the specifics on those. When that was all happening, I wasn't sort of following the Emmys in the way that I do now. So, because you're talking like 2013 and stuff, so.
Yeah, Anna Gunn did win Emmys for her role. Bryan Cranston won as well. Did Aaron Paul? Yes, Aaron Paul won. Giancarlo Esposito was nominated for Emmys. I mean, the show in itself had I mean, just a ridiculous number of awards, from sort of Critics' Choice Awards to Emmys to Golden Globes to I mean, you know. So, yeah, I mean, all the key cast at one point or another.
They like took turns.
Yeah, I mean, then they were nominated in different categories, obviously. But yeah, and I think actually it was the same episode that both Brian and Anna won for, I think, eventually. Because Anna, I think, only picked up one, but she was nominated a bunch of different times. I think Aaron and Brian won multiple ones over the course of the series.
Would Aaron have been listed as supporting actor?
I think so, yes. Yeah, Aaron was. Aaron and Anna were both listed in supporting roles, whereas Brian.
So who would the lead actress be? Because I would have thought that would have been Anna. Lead actress in a drama show.
Well, they didn't put her in lead actress. I mean, technically, yes, you could possibly put her in that. But in some respects, when it comes to awards nominations, it's possibly better not nominating her in the lead actress role, because that role isn't. I mean, yes, she is for that show, but that show is so much about Brian and Aaron that it doesn't. There isn't really a lead actress necessarily. I think there is an argument to say that she's a supporting role, and they're pretty much all supporting roles to Brian, even Aaron to a certain extent, which is why they're all nominated. I mean, in supporting roles, it sort of makes sense. You've got to bear in mind, I mean, they don't know exactly who's going to be nominated that year, but the chances are that if you're up against somebody who is genuinely the lead in a drama, it's going to be more difficult to win if you're more of a supporting character in a drama than, you know, the first name title lead. And that's who you're up against in that category. So
surprised me over the years, the like when I've seen nominations for supporting actors or whatever in a show, and I've looked at who like the character is, and I thought, oh, I thought they were like leading star, but you'd be surprised as to who you see in those sorts of categories. So because even though that is kind of surprising for Anna Gunn, because to me, I would look and say, okay, Brian's a supporting Brian's the lead actor and Anna's the lead actress, because those are like the two at the top of those lists, but it kind of wouldn't surprise me still if she was supporting actress, but sometimes those things happen. So like I think is it Rhea Seehorn, I've forgotten her character's name, my brain's not doesn't want to work today, Kim from Better Call Saul, I think in certain, I might be misremembering this, I think I've seen her listed as supporting actress, which is,
yes,
again, kind of surprising, because again, I would look at Bob and look at Rhea and think, okay, those are the two leads, but in those categories, but it doesn't work that way sometimes. So
No, it is up to the TV companies who they actually nominate in those parts and what categories they nominate them into. You know, there are times when shows get nominated in comedy categories, and you think, I mean, they're very, very, very dark for comedy sometimes. And you look at that, think that's an odd place to put it up against.
I think Wednesday got nominated in the comedy category, and I thought, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
The Netflix show, yeah.
Yeah, there are certain times when things get nominated in certain roles. And like I say, with somebody like Anna in this sort of show, and even with Rhea in Better Call Saul, they are, I think everybody in the cast is essentially a supporting role to Bob Odenkirk in Better Call Saul and Bryan Cranston in Breaking Bad. Pretty much everybody is, even though they're sort of main cast, and you could argue on some places they are leads. In most cases, they are supporting one lead character.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. But no, they were very chilling scenes between Skylar and Walt, as you also mentioned here. But that comes with good writing, good directing, good acting, good staging, camera work, facial expressions. There's a lot of work that goes into this stuff, which is why these people should be paid fairly. So, yeah. But because I think people do think that TV sometimes like really simple to put together, but it isn't. It isn't. So, but no, brilliant stuff with that. Any comments on the chilling Skylar and Walt scenes?
No, I mean, yeah, only what you just said, really. I think, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, there we go. That's it for this week's podcast. We'll be back with episode 4 next week. We've got 10 to go, so we'll see what happens with those. In the meantime, you can find everything else that we do on entertainmenttalk.org. TV, games, film was my night podcast. I'll upload this, and then, yeah, I'll record the preview podcast for the United cast. Look out for that some point later today as well. They may be uploaded at the same time or something like that, but look out for all our podcasts over there, podcast platforms, entertainment talk, all that kind of stuff. If you want to support what we do, you can either listen to more episodes, tell people, word of mouth, social media, or there's Patreon of the $5, $10 level tiers for the ad-free podcast review options. Look at that as well if you'd like to. For TV and film news, for TV and film news, if you want to know about what's going on with the strike or renewals, cancellations, all that kind of stuff, David does run a website called geektown.co.uk and also Geektown Radio on Tuesdays. David, recently come back with that. What's going on over there?
Well, the podcast is back for another episode. So Daryl was on from HollywoodNorthNews.net. And this week we talked about a lot of different things. Secret Invasion, we gave our thoughts on that as it came to its finale. Talked a little bit about Star Trek Strange New Worlds, Almost Paradise, which is the Christian Kane series on Freevee, Night Agent, we mentioned that, Hijack, which is one of those great Apple TV shows that we're talking about, Good Omens returned for its second season, so we're talking about that, and The Witcher season 3, we were talking about that as well.
Yes, indeed.
Also a bit of a catch up on the writer strike and the actor strike and what's going on with that. We talked a little bit about the Lando series and the Famous Five, because there's an adaptation of that coming to the BBC. So yeah, that's all on Geektown Radio episode 390, which you can find all over your favourite podcast player, and you can go to the website at geektown.co.uk for that. And of course there are air dates for UK and US TV shows. You can go and find those over on geektown.co.uk as well as lots of news.
Excellent. So go and check out all that. Just a bit of an update on The Witcher, because obviously I haven't done a podcast on it yet. I'm on episode 4. I am slowly but surely getting there. But yep. Yeah, I'll say my thoughts.
I did that
later.
Too. Yes.
Yes. I wasn't going to be able to do the binge thing I did before this year. So, anyway, I will talk about that at a later date once I've gotten through that. All right, Bex, you can find as well Trista, BYTES. I think she's doing a different job or something at the moment. She's doing some other stuff at the moment, but just across social media. And other platforms, Trista BYTES, just go and support what she's doing regardless, because she's doing some very good stuff. Yeah, Twitch is kind of her main thing, but she's on other places as well. Trista BYTES for Bex. Me over on Twitch at eTalk UK and YouTube Entertainment Talk Plays. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.